recently you've become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened, and your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose, your liver is defective, and you're coughing up mucus. It's like I'm reading about myself. Purport. The symptoms of old age, which had already developed in Dhritarashtra, were all one after another pointed out to him as a warning that death was nearing very quickly. And still, he was foolishly carefree about his future. The signs pointed out by Vidura in the body of Dhritarashtra were signs of apakṣeya, or dwindling of the material body, before the last stroke of death. The body is born, it develops, stays, creates other bodies, dwindles, and then vanishes. But foolish men want to make a permanent settlement of the perishable body and think that their estate, children, society, country, etc. will give them protection. With such foolish ideas, they become overtaken by such temporary arrangements and forget altogether that they must give up this temporary body and take a new one, again to arrange for another term of society, friendship and love, again to perish ultimately. They forget their permanent identity and become foolishly active for impermanent occupations, forgetting altogether their prime duty. Saints and sages like Vidura approach such foolish men to awaken them to the real situation. But they take such sadhus and saints as parasites of society, and almost all of them refuse to hear the words of such sadhus and saints, although they welcome show-bottle sadhus and so-called saints who can satisfy their senses. Vidura was not a sadhu to satisfy the ill-gotten sentiment of Dhritarashtra. He was correctly pointing out the real situation of life and how one can save oneself from such catastrophes. Vidura was presenting the naked truth, the hard facts of life. You've been blind from your birth. So already, it didn't start off perfectly. Already from the beginning, there was trouble. And then it continued. And now, recently, so many things are going on. Recently, Vadira, going deaf, Mandapragya, memory shortened, Vishirna Danta, the teeth are coming out. The gum starts receding every time a little bit more. As the gums recede, the teeth, the roots become exposed. And then slowly, slowly, one day they lose. They just fall out. That's what happens. You eat something and suddenly you realize, I just swallowed a tooth. I've actually done it. And so, like that, gradually, little by little, the body breaks down. And it's not all due to old age. Something may be due to an accident. Just a little accident, and there goes your knee, there a little accident, and then so many years later, an elbow, and it all adds up. And at the end, you know, it's an old, broken machine. And somehow or other, in the morning, we crank it back up. We drag it out of bed, stretch, and try and get older, and sort of tolerate a pain here, a pain there. The head is never clear anymore. A fuzzy head becomes the normal state of consciousness. Eyes sort of half blind, can't see in the dark. Yeah. All these things go away. And then you're next to a young person and you're just amazed what they can see. Really. They can see everything. We can't see nothing. So it's like this. And little by little, these motions are being experienced, life after life. It is Krishna's arrangement to gradually make us detached. It is Dainusmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara. It's this
this progression where we go from youth, the body is growing, gradually we're gaining in strength, where we get to the peak in our life, and then it goes down. It just little by little goes down. So we can see what it does with our ego. As we're growing, can't wait to be finally, you know, a grown up. Right? God, is it tough to be a kid? Never, you're old enough to do anything. Right? No. They take it out of your hands all the time. Oh God, you can't wait, you know, till you get a go at the wheel. Right? Finally, you know, you're there at the peak. For how long? Until, you know, little by little, we're losing it. And that's the situation. So it's interesting to not look at the physical side of it, but to look at the psychological side of it and what it does to the mind. You know, I'm almost there, on the top of my life, you know. A man like all power and muscles, a lady all beauty and everything, right? And next moment, you start to lose it. It becomes a little more difficult. So, like this, what to do? What to do? In this way we can see what Krishna is trying to do to us. Krishna is trying to bring us to detachment. Only a fool will remain attached, desperately attached. And Dhritarashtra is the prototype of one who remains desperately attached. After all, he just stayed in the palace. But now the Pandavas are like ruling that palace. So, I mean, Vidura is only warming up, right? He's just rolling up his sleeves as he's saying your teeth are loose, your liver is defective, and all these things, because ultimately he's leading up to the final punch, and the final punch is that you are living like a dog in the house of Bhima. Like Bhima, the one who killed his sons, and not only killed his sons, who ripped off the head of Dusasana and like held up the body with one arm and the blood was gushing out. It is said that Bhima did not drink the blood, but it touched his lips because he had taken this vow. But he was ultimately did not take the blood, so they say. Anyway, whatever may be, and here Dhritarashtra stays in the house being maintained by Bhima, and sitting on a throne. Man, they still let him sit on a throne. Although, you know, let's be real, you know. I mean, what is he? A has-been, right? A total has-been. But here he sits on the throne and he's just clinging on to the so-called royalty that he never really had anyway, because he was a regent, because he was blind. And therefore he never got the kingdom. But so attached to it, so attached to actually being king, and therefore if I can't be king, my son shall be king. Because I live in my son, and then my glories will be there in my son. But that didn't work out, because all the sons, the 100 sons that he had, were killed by the 5 sons of Pandu. How was it possible? But so it happened, and here he was. So Dhritarashtra quits home, is warning us of this, of keeping this attached position. Whereas at the end, where we see, all right, I give up, Krishna. I give up. I am simply, I'm depending on you for everything. It's very clear to me now. You give, you take. And now you are taking, and I'm in old age, and now more than ever, I depend on you. There's nothing I can do. So that's the purpose of old age, to depend on Krishna very much. And of course, every age is meant to depend on Krishna, but particularly at old age, because at old age, we definitely are destined to die at any moment. When in young age, we can also die at any moment. We can always die at any moment, but in old age, we will surely die at any moment. There is no doubt about it. So, in this way, let us not be in illusion. Let us just spend the little bit of time that is there very, very intelligently and use it. Use this precious time as a precious opportunity to serve Krishna. Pranirakta diyavacha shreyam acharanam sada. One should always, always serve Krishna. One should always act for the ultimate goal of life. Shreyas, not for prayas, not for immediate enjoyment, but for shreyas, for the ultimate goal of life. Etavat chanma safalyam deinam iyadehi su. If we want to bring this life to success, safalya, then that's what we must do, somehow or other. So, pranirata diyavacha, with his energy, with his possessions, with intelligence and with words, one should worship Krishna. And if we have no energy, then, well, maybe some possessions. If we have no possessions, all right, maybe some intelligence. We can engage our intelligence in the service of Krishna by trying to understand Krishna. Because the more we understand Krishna, the more we understand everything. Can I get to some water? The more we understand how the material energy is, how it works. We can understand how it's all related to Krishna. Why do we think that Srimad Bhagavatam is describing the creation? Is the creation so important? Not the material energy. Why endless discussion about how the material energy works? That's not the issue. We are interested in how it is related to Krishna. Janmadi yasya yatun viyat itaratas chate swapikya swarat tene brahmaridaya adhikavye muyanti yat surya. Yeah, we are appreciating how everything is connected with Krishna. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to his mother, that Srimad Bhagavatam is is in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end only discussing pure devotional service. So it's always discussing Krishna. Even in the ninth canto, when we get like descriptions of all these dynasties, you know, you go to these dynasties and the mind is thinking, wants to skip, right? Because here is name after name in the ninth canto. Name after name is given of a whole dynasty, and this one had that son, and you don't know the father, you don't know the son, and then that one had that son, and it's page after page, and the mind just wants to jump to the next chapter. Okay, skip this chapter. No. Because these are auspicious dynasties. The dynasty of Amsuman. This is the dynasty where Lord Ramachandra appeared, for example. So you hear of, just to hear the name Amsuman, blessed, sleep, Amsuman, blessed. Who is Amsuman? Doesn't matter if whether you know or not, blessed anyway. Because, so the whole dynasty is blessed, because, so Bhagavatam is actually connecting us with the Supreme Lord. It's describing everything that is connected with the Supreme Lord and nothing else. It's described how everything is connected with Krishna. Everything has its origin in Krishna. But we cannot see it like that. Because this moha, this illusion, even the suras are affected by illusion. So due to illusion, we tend to see things separate from Krishna. And it's when we see things separate from Krishna that we begin to care. Of course, we are now reading Ramayana because leading up to the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. Interesting discussions I'm following at the moment on what it started out with, when to break the fast, you know, at sunset, at 2 o'clock. There are so many examples where Srila Prabhupada actually in practice served a full feast with grains and everything at 2 o'clock in India, not outside, in India where it's more strict, in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, in the holy dhams, and so on. And then, of course, there is sunset, right? There is the reference to sunset. So there was a lot of back and forth, like with folio quotes, you know, like at what time to break the fast and what time to not break the fast, and so on. And then a senior Prabhupada disciple offered the solution that, well, since there are quotes on both sides from Srila Prabhupada, you know, clearly that he did it at 2 o'clock or at sunset, both is authorized. Okay. And everyone was very satisfied with that, and of course, let's see which one you choose when both are authorized. Make your choice. And then Shamasundar ACBSP came into the discussion. And he's an astrologer, right, as we know. So it was interesting what he came up with, because he said, it is said in the Ramayana, and he gave the reference, that Lord Ramachandra appeared during the nakshatra of Purvavasu. Yes, Purvavasu. And then he said, and according to the calculations of, you know, of when Purvavasu is there at that particular titi of Ramnomi, he says that's at 12 noon. Therefore, according to that reference, the Lord appeared at noon. Well, that was interesting. At least there was a Shastric reference for the whole thing. Purvavasu, there you go. Because these nakshatras, they change according to the time of the day. So, some astrological evidence favoring that Lord Ramachandra appeared at 12 noon. Who cares about astrology? Who cares? What's the meaning of the stars? Say, yeah, you may not care about astrology, but astrology cares about you. You know, and if the planets are not favorable, you know, then some things can happen, right? And remember, you know, like you had that disease, and if you check out the chart, you will find, you know, that just at that time, your chart was afflicted by some of the malefics, and therefore it happened. And then, as soon as you came out, you returned to full health and full glory, as if it never happened. Just see the power of the stars. And yet, Prabhupada says that Krishna can easily intervene. Prabhupada says Rahu has no meaning. Krishna can kick out a million Rahus just like that. So like this, we are not too worried. So all these things, have no meaning in itself. They only have meaning because of their connection with Krishna. Nothing has meaning in itself. Everything has meaning in its relationship with Krishna. That is one of the chatusloki of Bhagavatam. Ritiritam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyat atmano mayam yato tamayato basa. That the value of something is judged according to its relationship it has with Krishna. Is it anakulya? Sankalpa. If it is favorable, we'll accept it. If it is pratikul, varjanam, we'll reject it. Like this, accepting and rejecting of anything according to its relationship with Krishna. And therefore Dhritarashtra was at fault, because he was holding on to a comfortable physical situation. And he was not willing to let go of that. And he had even held on to that into his old age. So the result was, when Vidura came, and with heavy artillery, right, shooting like heavy things at him. Your liver is defective, your teeth are falling out, you're going deaf, you've been blind by birth anyway. Right? Getting him ready to tell him, get out of here. All right, very good. But we see that in the end, there is effect. I mean, Vidura's words, they work. They pierce the heart of Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra, as a result, leaves home. And then he goes into the mountains and the Himalayas and so on. And he sits down and meditates, and he becomes very accomplished in his meditation. He becomes a powerful yogi. And he is able to control the various elements within his body and dissolve them little by little through yogic power, and in this way give up his body. But he doesn't develop devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because that's not so easy. Mukti dadati bhaktina karichit. Liberation I will give you. Yes, that I will give you. But bhakti? Bhakti? I don't have any bhakti. Prabhupada explains that Krishna says, mukti I will give you. Bhakti? I don't have bhakti. Why? What are you asking me for bhakti? No, Krishna, what you have there behind your back? Nothing. Krishna, what are you keeping behind your back? I want that. Behind my back? What's behind my back? Yes, Krishna, what you're having? Oh, this. Oh, you want that? It's bhakti. Yeah. All right, then. I will give. So that he doesn't give so easily. He will test first. He may not give it straight away. We see many examples. Also, the acharyas were testing. We're seeing how Maharaj Pariksit is being tested. In the sixth canto, there's that description about the story of Ajamil. And before it comes to that, there's a discussion on Prayaschitta and basically atonement. And it is said that atone for your sins. That is the ultimate goal of life. The aim is to atone for your sins. And the king doesn't buy it. Right? The king says, no, I don't believe in this because I see that so many have atoned for their sins and then they do it again. So that, I have no faith in that. As a king, I have seen this, you know. I've corrected so many criminals and they're given the punishment, and after that, they do it again. So no, I don't believe in this atonement. There must be something more. Then it comes out. And then, of course, you know, it is devotional service. Keshit kevalaya bhaktya vasudev parayana agam duvanti kasneya niharam eva bhaskara. Then it is about just unalloyed pure devotional service. That's the only thing that can take the root of sinful desire from the heart. So we see that Dhritarashtra failed in that respect. It didn't take the root out of his heart because he didn't worship Krishna. So let us not look for anything else. It is about the purpose of all the scriptures is only to dedicate oneself in devotional service to Krishna. Sarva-vidhi-nisedu-shud-etyur-eva-kinkaram. All the rules and regulations of the scriptures are just the servants of that principle. Pure devotional service to Krishna, nothing else. Don't be fooled by some yogi who can produce ashes or do other things, who can go under the ground for 3 weeks. I saw in the Kumbh Mela, I saw a yogi with his head dug in the ground. I saw it myself. He was standing, bent over, forwards, his head in the ground. I looked at him, said there are three possibilities. One is he's dead. Two is he has an oxygen bottle there in the ground, you know, dug in. Or three, he has mystic power. Well, it's not just small mystic power either, serious mystic power. You try that. Any volunteers after prasadam, you know, we'll go in the garden and check it out. And no oxygen bottles. So this is serious. Such great mystic powers. But it's a waste of time. It's just a waste of time. Chaitanya Charitamrita addresses this topic. It's about, it is said there, it was a poor man. And this poor man, one day an astrologer came. And the astrologer said, oh, you don't know. Someone other than astrology is in this lecture, I don't know why, but, you know. I'm not advertising astrology, just that you know it. I'll make a comment about astrology at the end. But first, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this astrologer said that actually your father has expired. Yes, yes, how do you know? Yes, your father has expired, he said. And your father expired in a foreign land. It is true, yes. He said, but what you don't know is that your father left you a treasure. A treasure, really, yes. But he couldn't tell you before he died. Listen carefully. Okay, I'm all ear. Then the astrologer began to speak. And the astrologer explained. He said, do not dig towards the north. Because in the north, there is a big black snake. And this snake will devour you. Be careful. Do not dig to the north. There is a huge black snake. Watch out. Do not dig to the south. Because there are wasps and drones and they will sting you. Okay? Do not, by no means, whatever you do, do not dig to the west because there is a terrible ghost that will hound you. Oh my God. But dig towards the east. And if you dig towards the east, you will be very quickly successful. Well, okay, what to make out of all of this? It is said, digging to the north was chosen because the Himalayas are there, so many yogis are there, and all these yogis are trying to obtain mystic powers. But these mystic powers, they are like a big black snake, they will devour you because these mystic powers, they become an obsession. See, they take over. They take over because they take over our whole mind. Because now I have this power over others. And what I could not do with all that. So the power becomes something that just takes over one's whole consciousness. And one begins to use it to exploit others. In this way, one becomes devoured by the black snake. Digging to the south. You go to the south. I went to the south because I had to buy granite. And then one devotee said, there is this amazing temple where there's a lot of granite carving, and you may want to see it because, you know, it may be useful in Mayapur and so on. So, okay, I went to see it. But it was a demigod temple. And the people were just so devotional, worshipping the demigod with so much devotion. But all along, it was no devotion at all, because they were only into the profit. They were performing their worship to get material gain. He said, but that material profit, what will it bring you? You get benefits from your worship of the demigods. You get some material goods. And what will these material goods do? They will sting you. They will sting you. They will cause you suffering. Like wasps and drones that will sting you. Don't dig to the south.
Then the West. Yeah, West is best, right? So they think.
But West is completely captured by the ghost of materialism. The more West you go, the more West you go, the worse it gets. And actually the most West is China. Because the East is Mayapur. And any further East than Mayapur, there begins the West. See? So it's the East is Mayapur. After Mayapur, it's the West. So China is the most West of all, actually. So in the West, you become haunted by this ghost of materialism. And that will just become very strong. So the ghost of materialism is haunting us right now. What do you do when you're possessed? Oh, what do you do when you're already possessed, when it's too late, when you already carry the ghosts with you? Not one, but many. What do you do then? Then, chant Hare Krishna. Because that will drive away these ghosts. Anyway, so dig to the East, devotional service. Take up the process of devotional service. So the astrologer was actually speaking about the treasure of bhakti. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay, and since I said too much about astrology, I'd like to bring out a quote from the Harivamsa. The Harivamsa is a supplement written by Vyasadeva to the Mahabharata. And in the Harivamsa, at the end, there is a description of Kali Yuga, and it looks very similar to Srimad Bhagavatam. Very similar. But there's one thing that it says that in Kali Yuga, all the Brahmins, right, will give up the process of self-realization, and instead, they will preoccupy themselves with astrology. Well, that was interesting. Interesting quote. Then in the 11th canto, it said that astrology is providing us with the Rasi chart, with the birth chart. So astrology is dealing with what takes birth. And as we know from Bhagavad Gita, na jayate mriyate vakadachin, the soul never takes birth, the soul never takes birth. Never dies, therefore we have nothing to do with astrology. So, that settles that. The body may have, but how much do we have to do with the body? So the astrology can tell you something about your body. Yeah, so many people can tell you things about your body. Ayurvedic doctors feel your pulse and say, oh, you're full of mucus. He's right. But these are all material sciences. And they have no value unless they are engaged in the service of Krishna. So all these things have no value. Yesterday, I was blessed because I went to the Ayurvedic doctor. Right? I wasn't blessed because of that, but I was blessed because Indrajumna Maharaj walked in. So then I was blessed, and then we spoke about Ambarish, and who was also going to the same doctor, and the money that Ambarish has. And I saw in the Jumna Maharaj's eyes lit up, and he said, "Oh, Maharaj," and he smiled, and he said, "Look at that smile, Maharaj." Yeah. Because Maharaj is expert, right? He knows how to get big time donations. Big time, not just small time. Big time. But not a cent for himself. Right? All for the service of Krishna. So a Vaishnava has no interest in money for himself, but lots of interest in money for Krishna. Oh yes, give us. Give us everything. Not just a donation. No. We want a lot. We want a serious donation. Yes. So in this way, we were remembering Shamlal the other day. Now with Rath Yatra, right? Shamlal was going everywhere, and people are remembering Shamlal, who collected so much. And at the same time, who gave so much, selflessly. And therefore, although Shamlal spent his whole life collecting money, he never thought about money in the end. He didn't care about money. And he collected money his whole life, spent his whole life collecting money, big money. Right? He was close to very rich people. But at the end, when he got this brain tumor, he forgot everything and he only remembered two things. You know, he remembered Prabhupada and the stories with Prabhupada, and he told them 100 times or 100,000 times to everyone, 100 times a day. And the other thing was he remembered that he was from Navadvip, and therefore he was behaving like someone from Navadvip, like a Vaishnava. Oh, you have come to my house. I'm so blessed. Right? Navadvip culture, Vaishnava culture. So only these two things remained. It means that he had all these years no attachment to that money. Although so much money went to his hands, it meant that the money didn't stick. See, Arjuna is known as Dhananjaya, conqueror of wealth. Why? It's because for the Rajasuya sacrifice, Arjuna was sent to go and collect gold. There was this gold that was left over from some sage. Some king had donated a lot of gold to a sage, to the brahmanas, and this gold, the brahmanas didn't know what to do with all this gold. They had even golden arti paraphernalia, and they felt it was like too heavy, so they went back to the old ones. You know, I mean, golden lamp, you know, big golden bell, forget it. So they thought, this is useless. So all these things were lying there, this gold, and no one touched it. So then Yudhisthira sent Arjuna to take this gold so that it could be used in the Rajasuya sacrifice and used for the Supreme Lord, what it was for. And Arjuna came back with that gold, and then he got the name Conqueror of Wealth. Well, he didn't have to do much for it. All he had to do was load it up and bring it home. And for that, he got the title. So that was easy. Yes, he was conqueror of wealth because the same number of cartloads arrived as were dispatched. You see, that's why he was conqueror of wealth. You know, money. Money sticks when you go out collecting. So much for Krishna, so much for me. So much for Krishna, so much for me. That tendency is so strong. So strong. So, to have this selfless spirit, that is understanding the purpose of things, to just simply say, for Krishna. So not only are the things for Krishna, but even our body is for Krishna. Our house is for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Now let all be for Krishna. Then death cannot touch us. Dhritarashtra failed. He did leave home. He did become a powerful yogi. He did become detached and made progress. But ultimately, did not find shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. Then, what's the use of such programs? Talabhyatam upāryadā. Sometimes you go up, sometimes you go down in the universe. You may even attain liberation. Yes. But again, patantyane dritta yusvadangrahaya, again you come down to the material world if you're not taking shelter of the feet of Tadam. So what's the use? So ultimately, Dhritarashtra became a powerful, self-accomplished yogi. And so what? Even if he attained liberation, so what? Yen viravindakshi vimukti maninas. If you don't take shelter of the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, all waste of time. All waste of time. So it's so simple. And we have to become so simple that we just make everything for Krishna. Just everything. And then, yes, but don't we need a blanket for ourselves? Okay. For Krishna. To keep ourselves fit for Krishna. All right. Oh, okay. Everything for Krishna, but I can also use things for myself to stay for my service to Krishna. All right then. Oh, then I can have everything. Yes, you can. If your mind is strong enough. Because if we develop inadvertent attachment to material things that we use in the service of Krishna, then at the end of life, come back. You know. Oh, my little iPad, and next life you have to work in an Apple shop. And sell iPads. Or eat apples. Still, these things are relatively easy to give up. Because at the time of death, it's few people who actually are going, "My apple, where is my apple?" At that point, you don't care so much about the apple. You know, you see these movies of big, powerful sailors, and they go down into the ocean, and just before they go down, big guys with tattoos on the arm, and before they go down, they say, "Mommy." And then look. So yes, at the end, where is our attachment? Where is our attachment? So let it be with Krishna. Let it be with Krishna now. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasananyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati partin sintya. We have to practice now, right? It's an ongoing thing. It's not one time. At the end of my life, I've understood the Bhagavad Gita. Antakala chaman meva smaran mukta kalevaram. At the end of life, I must remember Krishna. Yes, easy. I got it. Got it. You don't have to tell me anymore. I understood. Yeah, I'll do it. Let's see. Because suddenly the temperature shoots up. It shoots up to 42. Whew, you know. And then it just drops like anything. Like, you try at that time to remember Krishna, not so easy. You might just forget, you know. Only if you practice, be regular practice, then thinking of Krishna is natural. Yeah. Okay, I'll stop. Questions, comments.
Didn't take up the path of devotion.
Yeah. So, because it's not just that you get it so easy. Just I heard from a great devotee. Yeah, but you didn't have faith because you didn't practice. If you don't practice, then you won't build up faith, you see. So if Vidura heard everything, but because he never practiced, his faith didn't build up. So he didn't develop sufficient faith. Vidura's words were like piercing Dhritarashtra's heart to the point that, okay, you know, he couldn't tolerate staying there any longer and being maintained by Bhima. That was clear. So okay. And the end of life is meant for self-realization. Yes. Okay, so he got into this mood of renunciation. That Vidura instilled in his heart. But he just didn't have faith in Krishna. It's not so easy to have faith in Krishna. Even when you know about Krishna. Even when you hear about Krishna. Even when you hear from a great devotee. And that's one point that comes out, and that's maybe the most important point of all, is that the faith didn't develop. And therefore, we need prolonged association of pure devotees. The Chaya Bhav principle, it's a topic I like. It's in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, shadow bhav, shadow ecstasy is there. It said, in the association of a great devotee, you develop the shadow ecstasy. You suddenly feel very enlivened. But as soon as he's gone, back down to your normal state of consciousness. Right. And that's what happened to Dhritarashtra. And he slipped back down to not fully, but he managed to land on the platform of jnana. So therefore, steady practice in devotional service. That is very important. Every day. Deva sankhya purva ganama gana nati bi. Therefore we must count our japa. Otherwise, chant when you feel like it. Hare Krishna, chant whenever. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Nice, Hare Krishna. No, sankhya purva ganama gana nati bi. So that you count, and that's a fixed number. Yeah. So that we practice. And not just riding on the waves of the mind. Otherwise, even if you hear from a pure devotee, you'll still be riding on the waves of the mind. Three modes of material nature are creating all these waves in the mind. Like that. That's why Dhritarashtra ultimately failed to find shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, we should also not get too much distracted by all these subtle sciences like astrology, Vastu, and all these things, right? Because it all doesn't matter, you know. It can. The northeast corner. The northeast corner is cut. Oh my God, that's the corner of, like, you know, for the gods, you know. What will happen, you know? It's like, one Vastu expert came to Mayapur, and he said, the Vastu actually is very good. There is only one problem in this place, that river. Funny. They send him home, you know. it's an auspicious river, you know, that the river is it doesn't matter on what side it is, you know, it's just, it's transcendental, and it's good on any side. Yes, you know, a river in the southeast of the Vastu Purusha Mandala is not good, right, because there's fire on the southeast in the Vastu Purusha Mandala, and then water, and when fire and water touch, then there will always be fighting. Okay, we try to fix it a little bit, right, by moving the Vastu Purusha Mandala a little up so that it doesn't touch the Jalangi, right, so that there's not going to be like that trouble and strife. And also, you know, the west, right, it's like the way the Vastu Purusha Mandala was at one point, or the location of the temple, is like then Vayu is in the northwest, so the Vastu people said, the wind will get out of control. The wind will destroy your temple. Well, you know, you could just think titanium roof, Mayapur storms. So we decided to move the Vastu Purusha Mandala a little bit, shift it, the Brahmasthana bit, the central point, so that it came down to the west, right? So that the wind, that according to Vastu, the wind will not blow over the dome. All right, we did some of that work with the Vastu people. But you know, as long as we chant Hare Krishna, all these things, Vastu, and astrology, and all these things, Krishna, Krishna will protect us. Krishna interferes. Krishna will take care of everything. Therefore, big discussion in Mayapur. Should we have Varna Ashram? And should we make, and I saw it like on the internet going up and down, and we should have a serious, you know, study of how we can incorporate Varna Ashram into Mayapur. Okay. But what about, how about incorporating pure devotional service into Mayapur? Right. I mean, let us incorporate the maximum of pure devotional service, and then, okay, we can have a little Vastu as well. We may as, and a little Varna Ashram as well. That's okay. We can have a bit of all that. But let's make it a place which is just filled with pure, unalloyed devotional service. That's what it's meant to be. Yeah. And that counts not only for Mayapur, that counts for our lives. That counts for our lives. Anyone else? Party's over. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.